how did the review come about, and what did your review ask?
Well, the review arose as a consequence of the revelation that in the public arena that the land and the soils and the water and the fish in and around the Williamtown RWF base up near Newcastle in New South Wales had been contaminated by firefighting foams. The EPA had known about it since February 2013, at least February 2013, in terms of the first report, the stage one report, and they had been informed that there were contaminants leaving the basin surface water approximately 9 months before that. I think it was May 2012. And they took action, quite significant action, in September 2015. And the minister, Mr. Speakman, who was the Minister for the Environment at the time, is now the Attorney General for New South Wales, decided that he wanted to have an independent review of the EPA's actions and knowledge of contamination at Williamtown. And so he called for a review, which was to include that matter, along with the management of PFOS and PFOA, or perfluorinated chemicals, in New South Wales more broadly. And the third component was to look at the EPA's management of contaminated sites in response to the Auditor General's review of the EPA, which had happened, I think it was in 2014. And so there was a requirement to look at the responses of the EPA in regard to all of those matters.
And so what did your review find? What were the responses like?
The review found... We found a whole range of things. If I was to focus just on the Williamtown matter, which is more pertinent to what we're talking about here, we discovered in our review of the documents available to us that Defence had known about the problem for some time. They'd known about the problem actually specifically at Williamtown since at least 2005 in terms of PFOS. Being in the soil, and it would appear that they had been doing groundwater monitoring using surrogates for surfactants since at least 1999. That was on the information that we received, and I cannot guarantee we received all of the information. And it was clear that the surrogates NDAS is a compound that they were analysing for is a surfactant, and it's a proxy for a whole range of things, including PFOS and PFOA. And it was quite clear that even as early as the late 90s, early 2000s, that the groundwater was severely contaminated across the base. Subsequent to that, there was a whole range of actions that Defence had undertaken. There was limited contact, to be fair, with the New South Wales EPA. And the reason why that occurred was EPA... cannot, or the all EPAs or related or equivalent bodies in the states and territories do not have jurisdiction over federal agencies or Commonwealth land in terms of regulating pollution that may occur on and off that site that may affect state or federal territory.
Yeah, and this is the problem that arose again in Brisbane here with the Qantas spill back in April, where the state had banned the use of FOA and FOS in July of last year, but because the airport is Crown or federal land, it was still able to be used on that site. Qantas has this week announced that they would be banning or rolling back their use of chemicals across the nation. And
well, it'd be really useful to know what they were using exactly, what they are swapping to, because light water was the product that was used by Defence in its facilities, which is the substance, slash the material that has contaminated surrounding environments around bases, whether the naval bases or the army bases or the air force bases. And then they swapped to a product called Ansalite, which still contains the perfluorinated chemicals, PFOS and PFOA, albeit at a lower concentration. So it would be interesting and useful to know, at least from the state and territory and the public's perspective, what the new chemicals, what the new compounds are that Qantas are using.
And coming back to that awareness of the risk, you said that there was knowledge about the Williamtown site since 2005 and there was monitoring there under surrogates from about 1999. Does it surprise you that the Shine class action for the Oki site is claiming that Defence knew about this as far back as 1991 or 1990?
No. No, I'm not surprised. No, because there was already emerging research way before the 90s that these chemicals were toxic and they were problematic and they were bioaccumulative. Emerging research. There wasn't a huge amount, but there was some activity in this area. And typically there would have been more activity in the industrial organizations who were making these compounds. And we know that 3M released a really significant report in 1999 that really tipped the balance in their view that, you know, they no longer wanted to produce this chemical because they didn't want to be associated with the potential risk. Furthermore, if you look at the NICNAS advice in 1996, which is detailed in our review, that shows quite clearly the recommendation from NICNAS that the chemical or the compounds, when they are used in firefighting situations, any waste products need to be collected and bonded and not allowed to be drained into and washed and flushed out of stream. They should be bonded and disposed of in proper waste units off-site. And so that's 96. People wouldn't be coming to that conclusion in 96 without having some prior other information. I am really not surprised, but we did not see information going back that far, but we certainly found information going back to the mid-90s that indicated that people had a fairly good idea that there were risks associated for the wider environment through the use of these chemicals. So what Shine are saying is not inconsistent with that.
And what do you make of the fact that Defence and the federal government are still saying on the Defence website right now that there is currently no consistent evidence that exposure causes adverse human health effects?
Well, I think that's a rather cute way of detailing the toxicological risk. I don't think that's not the full picture. I think the issue is a bit more specific than that. If you and I had PFOS on our cornflakes this morning for breakfast, pure PFOS, I don't think we'd be hanging around for long to talk about it. However, that's not the issue at hand here. The issue at hand is, what is the safe lower limit for PFOS? And what's the consequences? And they're very different questions. And I think it is fair to say that the safe lower limit is not yet well determined, and there's debate around the safe lower limit. However, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And we have something called the precautionary principle, which means that in the absence of scientific information should not be a reason to not intervene and not to take the highest precautionary approach, i.e. to limit exposures. And I take the view from research going back to the early 50s, looking at other toxic compounds, organic compounds such as mercury, lead, arsenic, for example. And there were early studies that showed that these may not be so good for human health outcomes. The information wasn't sufficient, it wasn't concrete, and there were widespread denial from industry. But the lessons of history have taught us that these early signs that these compounds were toxic were borne out with more significant research and findings sort of 30, 40, 50, 60 years later.